Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. 2020 has been a tumultuous year. A raging pandemic, a divided electorate, police violence and calls for racial justice, in addition to a seemingly unending string of climate disasters like wildfires and hurricanes. It's a lot for any one of us to bear, let alone our families and communities. What's a person to do to calm themselves, to stay focused, to remain in the present? Many people turn to mindfulness, an art innate within each of us that allows us to remain in the present, to breathe through tension and anxiety, to achieve more inner calm. Some of us formally practice meditation, which is related to mindfulness, but not exactly the same thing. My guest today, Dawn Mauricio, has been practicing and studying Vipassana meditation since 2005. She regularly attends meditation retreats throughout North America, as well as pursuing her calling in places like Thailand and Myanmar. She's become a teacher of meditation, based in Montreal, Canada, working with both adults at several locations and teens as part of a program called Inward Bound Mindfulness Education. Dawn teaches at mindfulness and meditation workshops and retreats, some lasting a day, others lasting weeks, all over North America. She's the author of a new book called Mindfulness Meditation for Beginners, which is just out from Rockridge Press. It's an accessible guide to 50 different meditation exercises which last anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. Author and mindfulness meditation teacher Dawn Mauricio is my guest today on Studio Tulsa Medical Monday. Dawn Mauricio, welcome to Medical Monday. I'd like to start by having you share with us the difference between mindfulness and meditation.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's one that a lot of folks don't really know or aren't clear on. And so the way that I define mindfulness is that it's this quality of awareness that we can bring to the present moment that doesn't judge and that is kind. Then meditation in and of itself are techniques that help us achieve a certain purpose. And so mindfulness meditation basically helps us achieve that quality of awareness in a way where it can be more accessible and more present in our day-to-day lives when we're not formally practicing.
So when you talk about formally practicing, you can practice mindfulness and you can practice meditation, and they're not necessarily the same thing, but they are related. So I guess, what would a mindfulness practice be like?
So a mindfulness practice in terms of, let's say, non-formally, it would just be, say, if you're at the grocery store and you're looking for a parking spot and someone by chance just slides in and gets that parking spot before you. Hopefully, or with some foundation of practice, you might be able to call on your mindfulness in that moment so that if there's any anger or impatience or maybe even rage that arises, it could act as a sort of gatekeeper so that you don't act it out in a way that could actually harm you or others. And then in a formal mindful meditation way, what that can include is there's like a whole plethora of doorways into the practice, but a common one is sitting or lying down and trying to observe your breath go in and out, basically, and maintaining some level of concentration as best you can.
You write in your book about health benefits of mindfulness, or you call them mindful health. What are some of the benefits that have been, and these are scientifically proven, and you take these from the medical and scientific literature, but there's a number of them, and I don't necessarily want you to go into all of them, but where can this be beneficial to an individual's health?
I think these days, mindfulness is enough of a buzzword for people to have an idea of the areas where it may be helpful. And for example, stress. I think we hear a lot about mindfulness being this antidote to stress. And the way that it helps in that sense is that it helps us to not take our thoughts so literally and we get to pause before reacting. Other areas also include anxiety. It could help us drop the story that is linked to the worry that is keeping us in that anxiety spiral, as well as sleep. I know that a lot of people are feeling insomnia or having sleepless nights. And so mindfulness can really help with that. And actually, sometimes mindfulness is used interchangeably with relaxation, but it's actually different, where mindfulness can help the body start becoming more relaxed because we're not investing in the thought patterns that are causing us to spiral or to keep us awake, but we're focusing on an anchor, like, say, the breath again, so that it helps to relax us. At the same time, on the flip side, when the body is naturally or already relaxed, well, then mindfulness, is that quality of attention, can arise more easily without us needing to make the kindness and the non-judgment happen.
That is really interesting. There's a couple more I wanted to ask you about. For example, chronic pain. Many people do suffer from chronic pain. How can mindfulness reduce chronic pain or lessen its effect on us?
Yeah, so I like that distinction you made about it lessening the effect it has on us, because it might not actually change the pain itself, but it changes or it begins to transform at least our relationship to the pain. And so I like to think of mindfulness meditation as this practice that helps us cultivate a tolerance for discomfort. And so chronic pain is a perfect area for that, in the sense that we could already have these preconceived ideas of how the body will be in any given moment based on our history with chronic pain. However, what we try to do with mindfulness is to meet the body where it is in each moment, which might mean having a split second of non-pain, but being aware or at least present for that split second, so that that moment of non-pain can help resource our system in a way where when the chronic pain returns, we're a little bit more energized or fueled to meet that challenging moment with the chronic pain. As well, mindfulness helps us to kind of lean into the chronic pain, in the sense that we have the tendency, which is a completely normal human reaction, to resist anything unpleasant or resist pain. And so when we feel the chronic pain arising or present, we'll tend to turn away from it. But what happens is that it tends to make the pain itself or the discomfort stronger. And so when we use mindfulness and we turn towards it, what we're doing is we're kind of getting a little bit more familiar with it. And then if ever our system is starting to get overwhelmed because the chronic pain is quite intense, or we just don't have any sort of relationship with it, then we get to pull away and focus on something that will once again resource our system, like looking outside the window, looking at a plant, or focusing on a part of the body that is not feeling pain. And then we kind of can do that dance as a way to help, as I said, increase our tolerance to be with that pain. We don't want to power through it and force ourselves to be with that pain for, say, a whole 20-minute stretch, but it's more like a leaning in and pulling out, almost like a dance.
Yeah, that's a beautiful metaphor, the dance, because there is certainly a give and a take with that, I think, as you articulate. Well, I wanted to explore, too, lots of people, I guess, think about meditation or mindfulness, but there's a stereotype of the seated Buddha, or that you have to become a Buddhist. And in the book, you try to dispel some of the myths, or you call them myths and truths about meditation. And I guess the most basic one in our very busy modern society, or this tumultuous year we've been living in, is, you know, I'm just too busy. I don't really have time in my day to make space for this. So what do you tell people when they confront you with that?
Yeah, well, I think that excuse is almost the equivalent of saying, I don't have time, or I'm too dirty to take a shower. So it's almost like, well, yeah, you might be too busy, but what's kind of paradoxical with this practice, when we stop and slow down, then suddenly making that time will become more natural, because we will feel the benefits of this practice all throughout the day, even from something as simple as a 5-minute practice. So it helps to calm the mind, but at the same time, we all have these very busy minds because we're taking care of so many things, and especially if we're tethered to the news cycle or something like that. And so there's that misunderstanding that meditation is about having this blank mind, or trying to make the mind this black room that has nothing in it. And it's not that, at least not with mindfulness meditation. It's more like, can we see the thoughts come and go, but not get caught up in them as best we can? And that's not easy, but the thing is, it's almost like a muscle going to the gym. We return to the breath or to the body in the present moment every time the mind wanders. And eventually that returning to the present moment will become easier and easier.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dawn Mauricio, who is an author and teacher, as well as student, of mindfulness meditation, and her new book is called Mindfulness Meditation for Beginners, 50 Meditations to Practice Awareness, Acceptance, and Peace. And it's just out from Rockridge Press. And Dawn, we're talking about some of the myths and truths about meditation. And I guess there's one other one I wanted to run by you, which is that sometimes people will counter with, I really like to do it, but I need to have that special time and place carved out. I need their special accessories I need in order to do this.
Yeah.
And that's not really true at all, is it?
Unfortunately, no, because we could move locations, like move to a new house, have a dedicated space, get all of the accessories, make sure it's blessed by the teachers and all organic materials, all of that. And then when we settle in for our practice, suddenly there's a fly in the room, or there's an itch on our arm, or a pain in our back. So all this to say is that we might want to have a quiet space, but to not depend on these external circumstances to be able to access mindfulness, because there's always going to be something, basically. And again, it's not about what we focus on. It's not about the room we're in or any of that stuff. It's really, again, this quality of awareness we can bring to any moment, even if that in that moment it's, we're not getting what we want.
You know, there's the last myth that you have in here is the goal of mindfulness meditation is to be mindful 100% of the time. And so it's sort of a self-defeating. I'm not perfect, so therefore I'm not even going to try is sort of how I read that one.
Exactly. Or sometimes with some perfectionists out there, overachievers, it's like really going at it with this wholehearted attitude, but in a way where we'll end up burning out. I've tried it and it doesn't work. So your listeners hopefully can save some time and not bother trying it. But basically, one of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, he often says, aim for short moments many times. And so the roots of this practice, mindfulness, are really in Buddhism. And in the Buddhist teachings, the word that is often used to translate mindfulness is sati, S-A-T-I. And that's the same word that is used to translate to remember or remembering. And so I like to think that a flip side of this word sati could be simply remembering to be mindful as often as we can. And so that's where I like the short moments many times where it comes in and can be quite helpful for folks who are just living their lives in a way that is not like a statue or seated in peacefulness all the time on top of a mountain, et cetera.
Well, one example that you give is being at the grocery store, say, and somebody, you know, cutting into your parking spot and using mindfulness as a practice or a tool to circumvent anger, perhaps, mm-hmm. or an overreaction, mm-hmm. or something that might feel a bit toxic. And so I guess a concern that some readers may enter your book with or the practice is, well, I don't want to turn into a doormat. I don't want to just be passive, and this is all about happiness. I mean, sometimes I've got to stand up for what I believe in. And you have a very interesting take on this. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. My practice personally has actually given me a stronger voice where I stand up a lot more. And so it's the exact opposite that has happened. I like to think that I am not a doormat. And what has happened is that mindfulness has just made what is important to me more clear. And so another way that this practice can be paraphrased is a practice that helps us to see more clearly. And so it has helped me see more clearly what my values are, what's important to me. And then as a result, I get to advocate for those things. And on top of it, we're not trying to pacify any of our emotions. All emotions are good emotions. It's just us humans that we tend to categorize things as good or bad, when really we mean pleasant or unpleasant. And so with mindfulness being a sort of like gatekeeper, what happens is that we can be with an emotion as it's really intense and moving through us, but simply so that we don't cause harm with that emotion. So for example, when I feel anger, I know that my anger just wants other people, especially those who I'm blaming for my anger, to hurt or to be in pain as well. But yet with my mindfulness practice, if I am able to be with it, it's not so that I can make the anger go away and then pretend that everything's okay. which is another misunderstanding of this practice or a misuse of it, but rather to extract the lessons without necessarily the hurt that I want to cause, and then from there communicate or express more clearly.
Okay, excellent. Well, it's a really, that's a very concise and, strong, clear description, which is really, really interesting to learn about. Dawn, I want to ask you about these 50 meditations that you have in the book. Now, they all, you say in the book that they range from 5 minutes to 15 minutes. And so, obviously, some people can meditate, and I imagine you might meditate, or your practice might be much longer, or at least early on, you talked about doing it for hours at a time until, I guess, there was an intervention done on you, and we can talk a little bit about that later. But how did you pick these 50 practices? And what, I mean, maybe you had a list of, I don't know, 100 or more. I mean, what were these, the 50 sort of easiest ones, simplest ones, or the ones most likely to enlighten or engage your readers?
That's a great question, mostly because when the opportunity for this book arose, I was worried. I didn't know if I had 50 meditations in me. And then when I actually sat down and started putting my ideas to paper, it was so obvious. There were so many doorways that were making themselves known to me in terms of ways we can enter this practice. And so I just really wanted, at least the purpose with this book as a whole, and the heart of it being these meditations, I just wanted to debunk this idea that meditation needs to be a certain way. Because I think for as long as we think it needs to be seated in this quiet, idyllic space, we'll never really get there, or we'll never really dedicate ourselves to practice, or we'll constantly sell ourselves short, thinking like, no, this doesn't count, or I'll wait until next year when I can go away, when the pandemic's over, et cetera, et cetera. And yet there are so many opportunities in our daily life to really start practicing mindfulness. And so that's what I really want to show readers, basically. And so there are practices that include a little bit of movement. There are some where we can do it in relation to doing the dishes or sweeping the floor, or, of course, seated, lying down, standing, walking. And then there's some where if you're feeling anxious, there's one that I call Countdown to Ease for those who might not be able to sleep, for those who might feel the urge to send loving kindness to other people, as well as sending loving kindness just for us, which I like to use on days that are particularly challenging. And so I just really tried to think of what has worked for me over these years and what do I appreciate most about this practice, and really putting it down in book form again so that we almost have no excuse not to practice, because as well, with all of these doorways in and being able to practice for as little as 5 minutes, I think it really leaves us with no way out, no excuses.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa. It's Medical Monday. I'm John Schumann. My guest today is Dawn Mauricio, who is an author and a mindfulness meditation teacher. She's author of the new book, Mindfulness Meditation for Beginners. And you can learn more about her on her website, dawnmauricio.com. And Dawn, I was wondering if you would, I guess, share with us, you took us through some of the meditation exercises, but a couple I highlighted here. One is simply standing. What does that entail?
Yeah, so I find that once we start waking up to this idea of mindfulness meditation and then bringing it out into the world, we get to see all of these areas or places in the day where we could be mindful. We could be spending time cultivating qualities like compassion or patience or attentiveness, and yet we don't, because we often just jump straight into using our phones or something like that. And so simply standing is another one of these practices where we don't recognize how often we stand. Even though a lot of us are staying home more than previous times, we're often still standing a lot at home, whether it's brushing our teeth or waiting for the water to boil, or even if it's standing in front of the microwave, whatever it might be. And then if we are going outside, well, then it could be before crossing the street, or waiting in line at the bank machine or something like that. And so there are opportunities to stand. And so how can we take those moments and use it as a time to reconnect with ourselves instead of, say, jumping into the information stream, which is a disembodying or a disconnecting feeling from ourselves.
Yeah, and that's a theme that comes up a lot is our phones and our connectedness and social media. Another one I'm curious about is just simply called take note. It was one of the simpler mindfulness exercises. What is take note?
So that is a good one for folks who have a busy mind, which is almost everyone. But when it's particularly agitated and it just feels like you cannot rein your mind in. And I know that for myself, I tend to think like, oh, it's not worth practicing right now, et cetera, because my mind is too busy. However, it's like exactly in these moments where it could be really useful. And so with a busy mind or a particularly busy mind, one of the things that is really good for it to do is to give the mind a task. And so to mentally note whatever is happening. And so that's what take note is about. So for example, if there's a sound all of a sudden, you silently say to yourself, hearing, hearing. If there's pain in the back, you might say feeling, feeling. If someone in the next room is cooking something, it could be smelling, thinking. Even if your eyes are closed and you think in visuals, it could be seeing. So it's basically going through the five senses plus thinking and just mentally noting whenever something of the five senses is getting activated.
That's very interesting. The last one I'll ask you about, you already mentioned dig doing the dishes. So is this an idea to take our dreaded drudgery and make it more pleasant, or just to, you know, really be in the moment?
Yeah, that's also, I really love how you phrased that question, because it's not necessarily about making it more pleasant. That's, again, another way that people hope to use this practice and sometimes get disappointed when things aren't necessarily pleasant because they practice mindfulness. It's more like, at least for me in my relationship with doing the dishes, it's more like making it more bearable. Because if, for example, I'm doing the dishes and I'm just resentful that I'm doing the dishes, or I just keep looking at how much there is to be done, I'm caught in my thoughts, which just really exacerbates the unpleasantness. And of course, I could put on a podcast or put on a Netflix show while I'm doing the dishes. However, as I mentioned a few moments ago, that leads to this disconnection from my body. And I think we spend so much of the day already disconnected from our bodies that I like to try to take as many moments as I can to reconnect. And so doing the dishes is like that good in-between for me, where I could notice the moments, yeah, of unpleasantness, but also of pleasantness that exists within doing the dishes, like feeling the warm water on my hands. Maybe I start off feeling as if a plate with all this stickiness on it is unpleasant, but then as I clean it, it turns into a pleasant experience. Noticing the body move as I put it in the dish drying rack, et cetera. So there's all of these moments that exist within this experience of doing the dishes. However, at least for me, when I'm not being mindful, I categorize dishes as unpleasant. When it's more complex than that, there's moments of pleasantness, unpleasant, and neutrality in there. And so suddenly it makes it a way more rich and alive experience.
I'm sold. I do a lot of dishes, so I'm definitely sold. I'm going to be trying this a lot more. Dawn, I'm curious, how did you enter the practice of mindfulness, or what point in your life, or, you know, how did you get interested or become, you know, want to become a teacher?
So I first stumbled upon this practice when I was backpacking through Southeast Asia during my quarter life crisis. I just finished school. I didn't want to do what I studied in. And so traveled across the world and was just kind of hanging out. And then I kept meeting people who had done this practice and would speak so highly of this silent retreat. And so I finally did it. And it was the hardest thing I'd ever done. And yet there was a part of me that knew that it was going to be part of my life forever, even though I plotted to leave the retreat almost every day.
Really?
But there was part of me that really knew that this was going to be in my life. And then I came back home to Montreal, where I still live, and there was not much meditation happening. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to pay for my groceries if I try and do this for a living. And so I did the next closest thing, in my opinion, which was teach yoga. And so I taught yoga, but all the while my heart was really in mindfulness and meditation. So all the while I was still doing a lot of retreats and studying. And then, it just started becoming this buzzword and something that everyone wanted. And because a lot of people already knew me as a teacher, knew that I had deep practice and study experience in meditation, then I just started teaching more and more meditation. And it kind of happened naturally. I like to say that I followed the green lights, even though, of course, it was way less glamorous than my previously corporate job paid. And my mom was worried and always thought I was disappearing into a cult or something like that. But she now sees that I'm happy and I have a book and that I don't ask her for any money, so she's happy.
That's the main thing. Well, so what, I mean, that's a great evolution in terms of feeling the calling, practicing yoga, teaching yoga, and then on this journey to mindfulness and meditation. But how did you manage to come up with a book or get that idea?
So it was really interesting where the opportunity really fell into my lap, where I got approached by this media company, Callisto, and they said that they were familiar with my profile and they had really wanted me to author a book with them. And so originally, writing a book was never part of my plan. And so I just wasn't sure. But not long before that, I had thought what I really want to do was remind folks that how accessible this practice is. Because I think something that happens with meditation teachers, and when I say meditation teachers, I'm talking intensive retreat teachers, where we will teach 7-day silent retreats and teach more in accordance with Buddhist teachings, etc. What often happens with us meditation teachers is we tend to talk to the existing practitioners. And I thought to myself, actually, you know, I still want as many people as possible to meditate. And so I knew I want to really reach beginners, and I love teaching beginners. And so when Callisto approached me, and that had recently become clear to me, I thought, okay, for sure, I want to do this book. And it was exactly, we both want to serve the same types of folks. So it was just really serendipitous.
Well, it's a beautiful book. It's a small book, but it's gorgeous. It's beautifully rendered. It's easy to read. It has nice large print. And as advertised, these 50 different meditations, which are all pretty short, certainly readable, and a little bit of your backstory, too. And you know, I just want to congratulate you on the book. The name of the book is Mindfulness Meditation for Beginners, 50 Meditations to Practice Awareness, Acceptance, and Peace. And it's by my guest today, Dawn Mauricio. And you can learn more about Dawn at her self-titled website, dawnmauricio.com. Dawn, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a real pleasure chatting with you.
Dawn Mauricio is a mindfulness meditation teacher based in Montreal, Canada. Her new book is Mindfulness Meditation for Beginners, 50 Meditations to Practice Awareness, Acceptance, and Peace. Well, that's our show for this Medical Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of KWGS or the University of Tulsa. For Studio Tulsa, I'm John Schumann with Medical Monday. Thanks for listening, and please be safe out there.